Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Fun show coming up with Mr. Executive Director. We're going to relive that amazing kick, field goal kick of Mike McCarthy down 28-3, kicking a 58-yarder late third quarter. So have some fun with that. We'll also do the baby bankroll bonanza. Big performance out of yours truly, 2-0. Dolphins take care of business, so we're going to have some fun with that. And break down the entire card. Also, we're going to insert some college football plays as well as we continue to evolve this Thursday podcast. And don't forget yesterday's podcast, in-depth breakdown of UFC 254, and also looking ahead to the weekend with Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats and Information Network, a gentleman we've had on the pod for a while. It's been a while, but we used to have him all the time. So a friend of the show, go check that out. That was posted yesterday on Wednesday, October 21st. But Mr. Executive Director coming up right now. But before we get into today's episode, I want to remind everyone to go check out another ESPN podcast that will help you with your fantasy football teams. Make sure you're staying up to date on all your fantasy football news with ESPN fantasy experts Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, Mike Clay, and Daniel Dopp on the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. You'll get daily strategy, previews, and injury reports to ensure you have all the information you'll need for your fantasy football team. Be sure to download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football and Behind the Bets on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Boy, is kicking for losers when you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys game this week on Monday night as we welcome in Mr. Executive Director. Now, Murray, I sometimes get desensitized to this and just kind of like chuckle, but this one I was riled up about it.
Well, I stopped watching the game, so I can't say I was riled up. One of my coworkers took a picture of his TV and sent it to me, and I laughed, and then I tweeted about it, and I think you responded to my tweet. But I wouldn't say I was riled up. I was laughing. I was giggling at the outrageousness of how stupid that field goal was. I'm giggling right now thinking about how stupid it was.
Yeah, I mean, so I was tweeting some live plays during that, and I think it was like later that they were driving, and I don't know. It was during that drive where I got like a ridiculous price, like 3-1 or maybe higher on like that the third quarter is a draw. And at that point, Arizona had already scored a touchdown. So you're basically saying that Dallas scores a touchdown, goes for one, and a nice price. Because I was thinking four down territory, that obviously skews the odds in your favor. And then when they attempted the field goal, I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then friend of the program, Jeff Ma, had tweeted, hey, they're almost in field goal range on the drive, like referring to the previous field goal at the end of the half. So like I like laughed out loud, thinking like, no way, you know. And then they did it. I was like, this is ridiculous. And then it's funny, the cherry on top is later they had a 4th and 10 and converted it. So
there's not many things that make me laugh more than tweeting about or watching incredibly stupid field goal attempts and joking about like, oh, hey, they're in field goal range now. And should they kick it now? It's always funny to me. It's probably the thing I enjoy most about the NFL these days. Is these just bonehead coaching decisions by these guys that are paid millions of dollars to run multi-billion dollar corporations. And this is what they're deciding to do. It's amazing.
You know, it really is. And it's sad. I mean, it's honestly like, it's laughable, but it's sad. And it just bums me out. And, you know, it's at some point they're going to come around, right? At some point you would think, but it's just funny when they think guys like Belichick are revolutionary. When it's like, no, that's what it should be the bare minimum. Like a 12-year-old playing Madden should be able to do that. But it messes
Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel did having 12 men on defense to take a penalty, that's revolutionary.
Yes.
That's next level thinking. The bar is so low for field goals and punts that just using even basic math puts you ahead of like at least half the coaches in the league. Vrabel looks like he's the guy that's moving things forward for us at least, but I don't want too many of them to move things forward because then what am I going to laugh about? Like, who am I going to laugh at if we don't have Mike McCarthy or Adam Gase or the great Hugh Jackson? Maybe they could bring Hugh back for me. But I don't want too many Mike Vrabels because then there'd be nothing funny about it.
You tweeted that it was called a Narduzzi. You wanted like an overarching, you know, sort of like just bad field goal choice. Like, I think we can get specific with this, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, Narduzzi kicked a field goal. It was 28-16. And he kicked a field goal to make it 28-19. I mean, what does that even accomplish? I can't even begin to understand the thought process there. Narduzzi's great, man. That guy would kick a field goal in any situation. I think he's doing it for my own amusement at this point. There's no other explanation.
See, I mean, we're not going to go down this black hole, but like, I really think the Narduzzi should be the short goal line field goal, and then
okay,
like,
well, he had like, the most famous field goal. Ridiculous.
Yeah, the McCarthy should be the long one. And the Jason Garrett. So McCarthy should be one that like ignores the score and time. Garrett should be one that ignores like the down and distance, like how makeable it is. So like fourth and half a yard on the 30.
Yeah.
Like that should be the Garrett. Right? Whereas like
Vance Joseph once kicked a field goal down by 4 at the end of the game. That was remember that one? That was a breathtaking field goal attempt. And then Narduzzi had a the whole thing's breathtaking. Narduzzi kicked a field goal down 10-3 from the 1 yard line in the fourth quarter, and the guy missed the field goal. That's why Narduzzi is my favorite. But
that's all kinds the one of I tweeted you the article. It was
yeah,
last year.
Yeah, I know.
Seven I know. With literally like 3.5 minutes left on the goal line. It was like
oh yeah, on the 1 yard line, and the guy missed the field goal. That's the best part. But the whole thing was great. It was the whole thing gives me endless entertainment. I'll tell you that much. And that's why I hope they keep around a few more of these dopey McCarthy type coaches, Pat Narduzzi type coaches. I don't even think Narduzzi is that bad of a coach.
No. I think he maximizes his players. I think they like him.
It's just the field goal decisions. If they got somebody, if they had an analytics guy to tell them like, hey, this is what you should do here, here, and here. And he actually listened to that person. He could actually be a really good coach.
To your point, it's not even an analytics person. If he had like a 12-year-old son who played Madden, it'd be fine.
That'd be better than what he's doing now.
Right. So as we had a nice loyal listener last week suggest a few minutes with you on college football every week.
Okay.
And so let's just, speaking of Narduzzi, if you could run down some sharp plays for our football fans before we get into the NFL, I think that'd be appreciated.
Yeah, I jotted down a few that we saw guys that we respect playing. One of them's moved quite a bit. It's for, I believe, Friday night game. They took UL Lafayette. They took +1. I'm sorry, they took +2.5, and they took +1, and now they're -2.5. So be careful with that one. They took Georgia Tech +4. They're at Boston College. That game's Saturday. They took Florida Atlantic +16.5. They're at Marshall. That's also Saturday morning. Careful, because we saw a lot of sharp money go against Marshall last Saturday when that went up in smoke. And then I'll give you two totals plays from a group that I really respect. They went under 54.5 in the Iowa-Purdue game. Good to have the Big Ten back, by the way. Yeah. And they also went under 56.5 in the Cincinnati-SMU game. That's a group that's been playing totals here that I really respect. They've been really doing – they've been crushing it, really, on totals
right.
in college football this year. So hopefully we don't jinx them too much now that you asked me, but they've done a very good job. And they had the under in the Kansas-West Virginia game this past Saturday, which was just a horrendous beat because I watched that. I was actually watching the game because, you know, I went to West Virginia. West Virginia's running out the clock, and they broke a long touchdown run. And then subsequent to that, of course, they had to kick off. And Kansas returned that kickoff for a touchdown to put it over the total. That was a brutal loss. So even when you tail these great groups, the best players we have, sometimes they're wrong and sometimes they're right, and they just get screwed the same way any of us do.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that game. I had a live bet on the under. My big thing is like end of the half. in games to bet these unders that are based on an algorithm just like skewed, like incorrectly, because they take out the fact that like teams are going to be taking a knee. And it's very right. pronounced in college football because such high totals, such high, you know, approaches to the offense. But when you get in the fourth quarter, I mean, even going back to the Chip Kelly days, this is when I really started to notice that Chip Kelly in Oregon, they would just take the air out of the ball in the fourth quarter. So like 7 minutes to go, let's say it's sitting on like 40, they put up like sometimes like 54 and a half. So basically like two touchdowns and a third score. And then they'd sit there on the field, just staring at the play clock, waiting for it to get to one and then snap it. And you're just getting a completely like off number. So
yeah,
I do that a lot. So I had a really good situation. And to your point, West Virginia is starting to run out the clock. So I'm thinking two scores is not happening. So I think it was like 10 and a half points over the what the current number was. Let's say the game was like 41. So it was like 51 and a half. So I'm like two mm-hmm. touchdowns. I'm like, come on. And then that happened. So, I mean, obviously.
It's a tough way to lose, man.
Yeah. Look, that's why it's there. And that's why, you know, it is what it is. But sure. It's funny that I was watching the same game. So anyway, I wanted to share that with some of our listeners because you can do that in the NFL. It's just not as pronounced because the NFL doesn't score as quickly. But there are ways to do that. With the live line and that extra hook on a third score, like if it's 14 and a half from the current total, that's like the key there. Obviously you have to factor in if the team's going to go for two or not. All right, buddy. Well, so we get the Cowboys now and FPI, we did something with Seth Walder on Tuesday, which I thought was really funny, not necessarily projecting the rest of the season, but currently FPI has Washington ranked higher as a better team than the Dallas Cowboys, which is funny to me, but of course they're playing it in Washington this weekend. And yeah. Washington's only pick at home. So I guess the market doesn't necessarily agree with FBI, but I found that fascinating.
Yeah, well, you know, there's not a whole lot of home field being built into those numbers. You can imagine, given this weird season. I mean, I guess it depends a lot on Ezekiel Elliott. If he's going to fumble the ball 20 times a game, then I would agree that, yes, Washington is probably better than Dallas. I mean, what is going on with him and this inability to hang on to the football? I'm not excusing Andy Dalton, but he can't really do anything if Zeke is going to be putting the ball on the turf all the time. It really just takes his team out of the game completely. That's why they fell behind so much against Atlanta in week two, was because he kept fumbling. So if he's yeah. going to keep dropping the ball, yeah. Dallas obviously is not going to be able to compete with anybody, even a team as laughably embarrassing as the Washington football team.
And on top of that, the defense has been horrendous, too. I'm in a fantasy football league with your co-host on the podcast, Kelly, and also Scott Van Pelt and some others, and Cousin Sal. He tweeted yesterday that he picked up the Dallas defense and saying how desperate times the situation is. And it's just they're that bad. But let's yeah. keep it in the division.
That's desperate. That is desperate times. For Cousin Sal. He's picking up the Washington defense.
No, the Dallas defense.
Things are not going well. The Dallas defense. Excuse me, I was looking at the game on my screen. You talk about desperate times calling for desperate measures. How many teams are in your guys' league? Is it like a 32-team league? How could you possibly be picking up Dallas?
Well, I think it's a Washington handicap on that one, so I think it's a rogue spot play. Let's keep it in the division. Tonight, Philly's now down to 4.5 as injuries. The Giants in town, not a huge road trip for the G-men. Any sharp action here?
Yeah, there's really not a lot of play on this game. Right before I called into the show to do the show with you, I was on a property-wide operations call, and they were asking me what's going on tonight in the sports book. And I said, well, there is technically an NFL game, but it is just complete dreck. I don't know how much handle we're going to have on it. Although I will say this, we'll get a lot more handle on this game than we would if it was at 10 a.m. on Sunday. There's one silver lining. What we're seeing so far is parlays to Sunday starting with Philadelphia or starting with Philadelphia money line. Other than that, really nothing to report for the Thursday night game so far.
I like the over.
Yeah, there's really not much on the total, to tell you the truth. There's just not the numbers bounced around a little bit between 43.5 and as high as 45, but we're at 44.5 right now, but really just nothing to report. Obviously, there's a long way to go here. And we've got, about 6 hours till the game starts? But so far, crickets.
Let's go to Sunday then. One of those 10 a.m. games. It might be crickets here too. Cleveland at Cincy. I thought it was a really bad spot, and it didn't really hit me till Sunday morning at about 5:45 a.m. I'm sitting on set and turn to some of the guys. I'm like, I think Pittsburgh rolls here. This is just a tough spot for Cleveland because of just the week in, week out, the big games. You know, we've talked about it with Seattle a couple weeks ago, playing, even hosting the Vikings. Seattle had played those one score games. It went to Miami, then had the big game against the Patriots, the goal line stand. Seahawks were just running on empty at that point. I thought the Browns, especially with Baker Mayfield a little banged up at the end of the previous game, the Colts win, I just felt it was a bad spot. So I don't know if this is a much better spot. They're on the road now with Cincy, although it's not the longest drive.
You know, can I just say I'm glad to hear that you were on set when that hit you, because I thought you were going to say that it hit you at 5:45 in the morning, like you were tossing and turning in bed thinking about the the spot for the Browns. So I was glad to hear that last part of the sentence while I was on set. It was a bad spot for the Browns. The public is coming back to the Browns this week, though. Even though they look bad on Sunday, this is exactly where the public likes to get involved. We talk about this on the show a lot, that cheap favorite on the road. We're going to need Cincinnati. There's actually quite a bit of money on this game already. Most of the money is on the Browns. Right now we're at -3.5 even money on Cleveland Browns. So we'll need the Bengals here. I actually think it's one of the more interesting games of the weekend because I like watching Joe Burrow. I'm curious to see how good this guy ends up being. And then I want to see how Cleveland bounces back after what was obviously a terrible performance last Sunday that kept you up at night.
Yeah, it kept me up. Oh my gosh, that 6 a.m. show, man. I'm just like a zombie some weeks. And then now as these late conferences are returning to the college football, it's going to be hell. It's going to be really tough. Early in the season, it was fine. I kind of liked not having the Hawaii game. But now with Pac-12 coming around the corner and some Mountain West games this weekend. By the way, Cleveland 1-6 ATS in their last 7 games as a road favorite. So buyers beware. So surprisingly, not cricket. So I was wrong there. Let's go to Atlanta. Your Atlanta Falcons finally get rid of Dan Quinn. They get the nice win.
I forgot about Dan Quinn. When we were making fun of coaches that kick field goals, we didn't even mention Dan Quinn. Talk about out of sight, out of mind. He's got to be one of the dumbest coaches I can even remember in terms of kicking. That guy would kick a field goal on 4th-and-1 in any scenario. I miss Dan Quinn.
Just God bless Arthur Blank, sticking with his employees. I mean, that's a guy who's not afraid.
Yeah. You know what? We joke about it, but when there's a hotshot assistant that has his choice of what job he wants to take in the future, somebody's going to mention him. Look how loyal Arthur Blank is to his coaches. You know, that's why Washington can never get one of those hotshot assistants, because they obviously have a reputation as a terrible job with a bonehead for an owner. So you wouldn't go to Washington if you had your pick of the litter. You'd go to a place like Atlanta.
And they had McVay under their watch too. They had the hotshot assistant. Let him go.
Oh, they had Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan too. They had a great coaching staff. That 2012 team that won the division and lost in the first round of the playoffs to Seattle, a game that they led 14-0, by the way, until RG3 tore his ACL. They had a great coaching staff, and those guys are all gone because they don't want to be in that environment. You know, everybody makes fun of Arthur Blank, but I think that'll pay some dividends down the road. He might have a better shot at getting a top coaching job because he does have a better culture there. But I do miss Dan Quinn. I miss Dan Quinn.
I don't think Falcons fans do. So they're laying 2.5 at home. Obviously, Julio Jones, I mean, just swings these games. But Detroit, nice little win there on the road.
Yeah, an easy win, too. And Minnesota, that's a team that we might have to start talking about. Do they need to blow things up there? They seem like they're in a bit of disarray. This game on Sunday, Atlanta -2.5 against Detroit. Not a lot of money here. You'll probably see Detroit in some teasers going over 3, over 7, but it's a high total game. We got a total of 55 here, so it wouldn't be the first game I'd recommend for teaser plays.
Right, all right. Speaking of teasers, New Orleans hosting Carolina. My Carolina Panthers finally lost, so they had won 3 straight. Can't get it done against the Bears. Just, it was an off game. Give the Bears credit, who are amazingly 5-1, even though they've won those total games by like 20 points, I swear. 7.5 feels like the right number. I think the only thing I would consider is a tease here.
You know, what's weird about this game is, yes, obviously the Saints are going to be in a lot of teasers, and they've already been thrown into a huge amount of moneyline parlays. We haven't written a single straight bet on the New Orleans Saints here. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we haven't taken any bets on the Saints. We've got a lot of parlays and teasers with the Saints. We have not had one person yet say, give me a straight bet on the Saints. It's Thursday morning in Vegas. That catches my eye. That's very unusual.
Have you taken Panthers tickets?
There's 17 straight bets on the Panthers. Now, remember, most of the money we're getting here, it's either wise guys chasing numbers around or parlays from the public. So the straight bet column from non-wise guys, there's never a ton of bets this early in the week. Those bets all come on Saturday and obviously Sunday, but it's still unusual to look at the screen and see zero straight bets on a team. Very strange.
You said 17 on Carolina. How many parlays are involved with New Orleans and teasers?
Oh, there's hundreds of parlays. That's how people bet the NFL. They just parlay all the games together. That's how it works.
That's funny.
I wouldn't recommend really doing that, by the way. Let me clarify. I wouldn't recommend parlaying.
No, you're not a big fan of that move.
Well, I am from the perspective of as a bookmaker, I'm all for it. But no, if you're a listener, I would probably stick to the straight bets. It's hard enough to pick one in this league, believe me. I'm proof of that.
Teddy Bridgewater, 18-4 ATS in his career as a dog.
Yeah, but it could be setting up. What's the point of this? It could be setting up as a square dog. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Right.
So it looks like a good situation for Carolina. They're off of a loss. New Orleans hasn't exactly been lighting the world on fire. This might be a good time to get in on Carolina. The only thing that I would say is there's a lot of people that think that way right now, at least here. It looks like a lot of people are going with Carolina. I'd be a little
wary. Well, it's only 17, though. You said there's only 17.
Oh, I know, but there's also, like I said, hundreds of parlays. I mean, there's a lot of money on Carolina.
Oh, I thought you said it was the hundreds of parlays on the Saints.
Oh, no, like, well, there's hundreds of parlays on both teams. Both teams. That's how people bet the NFL. That's what I said.
But you have not.
There's 17 straight bets on Carolina. There's zero on New Orleans. And then there's hundreds of parlays on both.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I thought you said it was a bunch of just involving the Saints money line and teasers. Okay. That makes more sense. Okay. The next game, I mean, look, I'm in the TV business. I like headlines. I like storylines. This one has captivated me. The New York Jets. Remarkable what they are doing.
Yeah.
I was aggressive in the bonanza last week and really didn't blink an eye. I was like, this is going to be a beatdown. They are 0-6 straight up and 0-6 ATS to start the season. Last time the team did that was 2011. That was the Rams in 2011. Only three teams in the history of the NFL, so the Super Bowl era, which is 66, have started 0-7 straight up in ATS. And I think the Jets are special like that.
It's hard to be 0-6, 0-7 against the spread. The spread is supposed to be the great equalizer that brings the two teams together. This will be probably the most lopsided take count of the week. I would guess it could be this one or it could be the next game we're about to talk about. But right now it's Buffalo. Buffalo's a 12.5-point favorite. They've lost two games in a row to good teams. They lost to Tennessee. They lost to Kansas City. They've got New England on deck. Will they look past the Jets in this game? Could you blame them if they did?
I mean, yeah, I would. If you want to be a playoff team, you lose back-to-back games. You can't look past anyone.
No, that's true. But we need the Jets. We'll definitely need the Jets to at least cover in this game. We also have this prop I wanted to talk about a little bit. Will the Jets go 0-16 in the regular season? We had a sharp guy lay us no -$4 yesterday. A respected player laid no -$4. He moved us to -$450. Nothing really sharp, so to speak, in his game, though. It's just the public guys are all starting in on parlays of the Bills, parlays of the Bills' money line. And, yes, there are hundreds of tickets on the Bills' money line.
So I was talking about this bet a few weeks ago. I thought this was a special team. And then just Gaze and just the dysfunction. Is Flacco playing this weekend? Because I'm on Buffalo if he is.
Because you think Flacco is like considerably worse than Darnold? That's what I think. They've got Darnold listed as questionable right now. I've been in the camp of I don't blame all this on Sam Darnold. I think he's in just a horrible situation with a terrible team around him, a bonehead of a head coach. I don't understand how Greg Williams keeps getting work as a defensive coordinator in the NFL. I mean, there's only so much you can do as a young quarterback, and Darnold is just stuck there right now, and it's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, I agree. I think Flacco this age is nowhere. I mean, Darnold is better.
I think so too.
I watched the last two games with Flacco, and it's just been, you know, I mean, I've had pretty sizable wagers against him. I think the Jets, I talked about a few weeks ago, there's a strong chance they go 0-16. So I wouldn't take 350 now, but a couple weeks ago I was saying to do it, and I like Buffalo this week. I do. I just, the Jets are awful, man. They just stink, and I'm sorry, they do. And they're special.
I still can't agree with the crowd that says Trevor Lawrence should go back to college instead of being a Jet, though. That's a bridge too far for me. If you're going to be the number one overall pick in a draft, go get your money, get the clock started on your rookie deal, because your real money is your second contract. Get the clock started on that and go get your money. I do not agree with the stay in school crowd. No.
Well, and Gase is a goner, so maybe Woody Johnson wants to bring Dabo to the NFL with him, or just something like. I mean, there's just so much more you can use your leverage. You can kind of influence the front office. You can do a lot of things as the top quarterback. Just ask John Elway, who did that many, many years ago with the Colts and orchestrated and Eli Manning in more recent NFL history. Yeah. So it can be done. And it's not
both
just
those guys ended up.
Outcome.
Both those guys ended up winning two Super Bowls with those organizations, and both those guys are probably pretty well off these days. I know Eli Manning certainly is. So
yeah,
I mean, go get the clock started on your rookie contract and get yourself into the NFL if you're going to be the first overall pick in the draft. You've got to do that.
Next game, you hinted towards it. Green Bay is at Houston. The Texans, your guys. That was a team. That was your Musburger pick. Tough beat, right? That was your pick, or was that the Falcons?
I don't know. I didn't do the show last week. I gave I was in a meeting all day last Wednesday. I did on this show the Falcons.
Okay, my mistake. I thought I remembered Texans. So that was a chic underdog. You mentioned, it is the Falcons. I'm looking at it now. My apologies. I'm just saying this was a wild, I mean, look, I was on Tennessee. I got lucky to cover. I'll admit it. Houston's played a little bit better the last few weeks. Packers really flattened at Tampa Bay after taking the 10-0 lead. It's an interesting line for me. I kind of lean to the Pack, but I probably not pulling the trigger.
I think you're probably looking at the highest volume game of the morning, talking about Sunday morning. Green Bay, extremely popular public side here. You've got this cheap road favorite against a 1-5 team that fired its head coach. Green Bay is coming off of a loss. People may be expecting a bounce back here. This could be our biggest decision of the week, if other than the Chiefs game, of course. If, God forbid, they don't have that Sunday night game, I think this will be the biggest decision of the week, other than us needing Denver, will be us needing Houston against Green Bay on Sunday morning.
Huh. So people are not discouraged by the Packers' performance last weekend?
Maybe they're backing off a little bit, and maybe that's one of the reasons why Tampa Bay was such an incredibly public side until we closed wagering this morning. But no, for the most part, we're still going to need Houston big. Houston's 1-5.
Yeah.
And people are seeing that 3.5 and they're going, this is a layup. So, you know, this is going to be a very one-sided decision for us here for sure.
Same spread. The next game, Seattle at Arizona, as we go to the 1 o'clock West Coast games. This is a great game. Just a great, I'm hoping Arizona comes to play. Short week, obviously turnaround having gone to Dallas, but Seattle has a knack for playing one score games.
Yeah. And this is an interesting game. I agree with you. It'll be interesting to see how Kyler Murray and that Arizona offense handles itself against Seattle, which we've talked about this on the show for weeks. Seattle's defense is lousy. I know that they've got Mr. Unlimited Russell Wilson covering up for everything for that whole team. They're a lousy defensive team. what kind of success can we see from Kyler Murray here in this game? We've got a total of 56 on this game. Oh, it's an unbelievably high total for a Seahawks game. It just looks crazy to me. But so far, most of the money's on Seattle. There has been some money on Arizona, too. It's not a complete avalanche of Seattle money. Looks to be maybe the most high-volume game in the afternoon, other than Kansas City, of course.
You mentioned the total. I mean, that makes sense, right? Arizona's got a bad defense and a high-flying offense, right? Right?
Absolutely.
Not so fast, as Lee Corso would say. They're the only team in the NFL where every game has gone under.
I think that, wow, that is interesting. Because I think the perception is, well, now that Chandler Jones is out, that that's where they'd be more susceptible would be their defense. That is interesting, and that's a very high total. We'll see. Can they go score for score?
Been sort of, there were times where that offense is where people were clamping down a little bit on it.
That's true. And they had a stretch there where they lost some games where the public was all over them. I want to say against Detroit and Carolina, if I have that correct. So they had a couple times where they let the public down. But Seattle, can Seattle stop Kyler Murray? That's what it really comes down to. I know that Russell Wilson's going to get his. Can Seattle's defense stop Kyler Murray? They haven't been able to stop anybody. So that's an interesting matchup, I think.
For what it's worth, Seahawks have covered 3 straight following a bye and have covered 7 straight when they've had at least 7 days between games. So I'm thinking like the Thursday turnaround to the following Sunday are included in that. So for a team that has a knack for playing one-score games, that's something worth noting. I'm fascinated by this next game, San Francisco at New England. Niners gave me a little life into my big ticket I have on them to make the postseason, -320. Mm-hmm. Look, it's a tough division, all that, but they're finally got a little healthier. Kittle's been back the last couple weeks. Jimmy G played well. So get the nice home win against the Rams, who have yet to beat a team outside the NFC East. And they got to go to New England. And I'm throwing out the game last week for the Patriots just with the COVID stuff and all that. But how about this? Since the start of 2003, Belichick is 41-16 ATS off an outright loss.
Yeah, and I see there's a lot of reasons to like 49ers teasers here. You go through 3, you go through 7. It's a low total game. We've got 43.5 here. That number's down from 45.5. A lot of sharp money on the under 45.5, under 44.5. That'd be good too if you got Niners +8 because you're thinking good. It's going to be a low scoring game. I would still be careful because you're talking about going against Bill Belichick off a loss. That's always a risky thing to do, but the 49ers look like a very tempting teaser option for this Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what Belichick did to Jared Goff in the Super Bowl a couple of years. I wonder if you're going to have a similar performance against the Niners with Jimmy G. I like Jimmy G, but Belichick knows Jimmy G, and he's obviously a scout like anyone. I'm worried that I think to be honest, if I had the stones to do it, I would bet under on all the Kittle stuff because Belichick's go-to move is to take your best option and eliminate him, right? He did that with Waller earlier in the year with the Raiders game. Now, the Raiders didn't have Ruggs in that game. That was huge. I know he doesn't sound like he's a speedster, but he just stretches the floor and everything like that, or stretches the field, I should say. And I don't think you can do it as simple against Shanahan as you can maybe against Gruden. But I have a feeling Kittle's going to be like double team, basically. Like, all right, go beat me with your other guys that no one can name.
I mean, that would make sense. And that's absolutely what Belichick is known for, obviously. You know, this number was a little higher. This number was more like in the 4 range briefly. That was Sunday. And then obviously San Francisco had the very impressive performance on Sunday Night Football. That's why you see this number come down to 2. 49ers finally look like the 49ers team we expected to see with a pretty comfortable win over the Rams on Sunday night.
Yeah, I just caution everyone ready to jump on the Niners and remember what you last saw. Are we really prepared to say Belichick's going to start the season 2-4? So just want to, you got to ask yourself.
I would always say that there's probably something better to do with your money than bet it against Bill Belichick. There's got to be something you could be doing with that money, man.
Next game on the docket is right here in Las Vegas. It's Sunday night. The news surfaced yesterday that the entire Raiders offensive line was sent home with a COVID scare. So this game could get canceled, all things considered. But Tampa Bay is a road favorite. It's it was 3 at the time. I'm seeing mostly 3.5. So you guys are at 4.
Yeah, well, you know what? We were at 4 this morning. We had a conversation early this morning, like before I got to work, and we decided to close the betting on that game for now. We're taking a wait and see approach. Obviously, you already touched on it, but all these guys in COVID protocol, quarantine, also added that list, safety Jonathan Abram, the second year safety, first round pick. He also was sent home for the same reason. So we want to see who's in and who's out for the Raiders before we put the betting back on here. And but more importantly, we're just fingers crossed that they play this game. This was setting up to be one of our biggest handle games of the year in the NFL. Sunday Night Football, the Buccaneers with Tom Brady off of that great win against Green Bay, the Raiders crowd in Las Vegas. This could have been one of our biggest games of the year. I'm just rooting for them to play at this point.
Yeah, I think we all are. And it's interesting when that stuff happens, you guys just let the market move and you don't sort of take it off the board. And because I guess if too much stuff happens with COVID, they're just going to cancel the game. Kind of like we've seen with recent weeks with Tennessee and some other games.
Well, except that we do have in our house rules here that it's action whenever played until next August. We put that rule in when we reopened after the pandemic. So it's not like we would just be refunding the bets. That's our rule. That's a very specific rule to this house that was just added in over the summer to prepare for this football season, because we knew something like we thought something like this might happen. We still want the game to play. We were just moving up with the market. We didn't really take any money on the Buccaneers. We just want the game to go off, because no matter what you do, almost 90-95% of the money you're going to write is going to be on Sunday anyway. As long as we get the game, we're happy. And then, or they could move it to Tuesday and move one of these other 10 a.m. games down to Sunday night. That'd be even better. Yeah. Anything that gives us more island games, more primetime games, we are going to say thumbs up, give it to us.
Well, I would think the first game they would want to flex is this next one on the card, is Pittsburgh at Tennessee, battle of undefeateds. We saw a move yesterday. Pittsburgh was like, I believe, -2, and it moved all the way to Tennessee -1. And I texted you about this move. I mean, this is pretty – I mean, look, it went through 0, not the huge, huge thing, but still notable.
Right. No, it's a pretty big move, and we're monitoring it. I know there are some injury concerns for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Marquise Pouncey, David DeCastro, the offensive lineman. Bush, the linebacker, I believe his name is Devin Bush. He's out for the year with a torn ACL. No questions about that one. But Pittsburgh's a little banged up, and we've talked about this on the show. Like, Pittsburgh's a team that hasn't really gotten that much respect in the market this whole year. I mean, I remember that game when it was Houston at Pittsburgh, like week 4, where all the wise guys were lining up to bet Houston and the number just crashed. Pittsburgh ended up covering that game. But we've seen a few times this year where the market has moved against the Steelers. I know they're 5-0 and they look very impressive, but they're a team that's been rejected by the market several times this year, and we're seeing it again this weekend.
Interesting. Look, I'm a big Titans guy. I'm a big Tannehill. I've been on that train since day one. Maybe not day one, but pretty early on. But this will be a really interesting game. I'm really fired up for this game as a football fan and everything. It just should be a really solid game. The next game is going to be probably on my teaser card. Chargers at home to Jacksonville. The solid 8 here with Herbert. And I keep thinking of the Costanza jokes, a bear. And every time I see it, I just can't stop thinking. A lot of faith in Justin Herbert here.
Yeah, well, we've seen bettors that don't have faith in Justin Herbert here, at least at the Superbook. They took 9.5 and 8.5 with Jacksonville, groups that we respect, and we see that number now down to 7.5. So you're right. There's going to be a lot of money line and teaser action on the Chargers. I almost said San Diego on the Chargers, but the wise guy groups here were taking the points with Jacksonville early, and that's why you've seen that number come down a little bit from where it was.
Well, we certainly know what the Chargers are like in the favorite role. It's just not the time you want to jump on.
No, forever. The home favorite role, too. That home favorite role, this has been going on for years with them, where they're a live road dog, and then they never get it done as a home favorite.
Beating it last season, Chargers are 0-5-1 ATS as a home favorite, so right on cue there. I will say this. The Jaguars have the Jets to thank. If it weren't for the Jets, we'd be talking about this Jags team. They had the fluke win in the opener. they've also like not covered four straight. They've looked pretty bad.
No, Rivers gave that game to the Jaguars. We're talking about week one Colts Jaguars game. Otherwise they'd be sitting on 0-2. So absolutely, I agree with you. People maybe are looking past how bad Jacksonville is to look at how bad the New York Jets are.
All right, so back-to-back nights, get the Island game in L.A., so Chargers on Sunday, and then the Rams hosting the Bears.
Did we do Chiefs-Broncos, Doug?
Oh, gosh, I skipped that game because I'm an idiot. Okay, let's do Chiefs-Broncos.
I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't use the word idiot, but we – yeah. No, I only brought it up because that could be one of our – that might be our highest volume game of the week. Probably okay. Will be. If we don't get the Bucks-Raiders game, everyone's going to bet Kansas City, obviously, right? Kansas City money line, Kansas City teasers, Kansas City minus the points. They're betting the over. We're going to need Denver's defense to stand up a little bit. It's tough. You don't really want to be sitting here on a Sunday rooting against Patrick Mahomes. That's a very unsettling position to be in. He's pretty good.
He is pretty good. I don't know what to make of the Denver win. It certainly was a strange and surprising score. I mean, just all field goal fest. So maybe kicking is for winners when it talks about that game. But bizarre game. And then finally the Patriots woke up. But I said earlier, like, I'm throwing out that loss for New England just because of the COVID stuff and everything that transpired leading up to that game. Right. So I can't put too much stock in it, but it is good to get Drew Locke back for Denver. Maybe getting a little healthier. I mean, this was a team that we thought would be frisky this season.
We liked Denver a lot coming into the season. I think you and I even talked about that on the show before the season, how high we were on the Broncos. They've had a lot of guys get hurt, including Drew Locke, Von Miller, of course. Their offensive skill position players have been in and out of the lineup. They've been a really banged up team. But yeah, they were definitely a team that a lot of us were pointing to as watch out for these guys this season. They just haven't really been able to get on track because of all the injuries.
Sure. Sure. Okay, now we go to the Monday night game. Rams are laying 6 now to Chicago, but then again, I don't trust the Bears.
I know you like these kinds of numbers. I'm just going to caution, it's too early in the week to draw big conclusions. This game is still, 4 days away? But we've got about a 3-1 ticket count on the Chicago Bears. They are getting 6 at the Rams. I think if this game was being played under normal circumstances, that the stadium would just be flooded with Chicago Bears fans in L.A. Right. to check out that new stadium and to get out of Chicago for a weekend. I mean, flooded with Bears fans. Not going to be any fans there for this game. It's not stopping the public, though. They are backing the Chicago Bears about 3-1 count here at the Westgate on that game.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I know you like those stats. I saved those little nuggets for you.
I appreciate that. I do. I would have preferred like a 7-1 ticket count, but I'm okay. I'm okay with 3-1. You can cook the books.
Hey, you can't have everything you want in life, you know.
Right.
You know, the best ones though are when the best ones are when they all bet the dog and I see the number going up. That's when I'm like, oh boy, I better text Doug.
That was
we had one of those last week. The Bucks Packers game was like that early. Now the number did come back at the end. But early on, we saw that where everybody was betting Green Bay, the number was going against it, and obviously we saw what happened in the game.
Funny, my text. I didn't get a text from you, Murray, last week on that one.
I thought we talked about it on this show, did we not?
I need my hand held. I need to explicit. Oh, I need you to drive.
Why don't
my
I,
house,
why don't I
send, log into my account?
Send a pigeon to your house.
I need the bat signal. I need the bat signal.
All right.
Yeah, no, I mean the Rams. Look, the Bears have cost me some money this year, so I'm not going to lie. So I want it back. I think this could be a Rams blowout, but I don't think the Bears' defense is as good as, like, you know, we're used to seeing the Bears have shaky quarterback play and grind out some wins. We're used to seeing lower scoring games and things like that. But we're used to seeing it done with a kind of like standout defense for Chicago, but we're not getting that this year.
No, I wouldn't go so far as to call it a standout defense, but I actually give the Bears a lot of credit. They have taken care of business. I don't think the Bears are an elite team by any stretch. They're probably not as good as their record, but the bottom line is that they're going out there and they're winning these games. That's all you can do is just keep moving ahead and beating the teams that are placed in front of you, and they're doing that. So I give the Bears some credit. I don't think much of Matt Nagy. I think you know that, but I give the Bears some credit.
It was for sure. They deserve to be, you know, deserve credit for being 5-1. I look, that was a nice win last week. Go to Carolina and basically lead wire to wire Well done for them. So you gave me the ticket count there, and I think that puts a bow on this week, unless I skipped any more games because I'm a knucklehead. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with this Vegas game. If it gets canceled, I would assume they'll flex a game. I mean, that makes sense considering you don't have to, like, really reschedule too many fans. I mean, that's usually the reason you can't move a game so late. So maybe for TV purposes, they'll do that. But then again, we got the World Series on Sunday night. So, and we are guaranteed to have a game five now.
Yeah, and you know, the book here at the Westgate, at least, we're really rooting for Tampa Bay. I mean, we had – Tampa Bay was already our number one, our best future book position going into the postseason. Now we get them in the World Series, and then Monday before game one, we had a gentleman come in, and he bet the Dodgers series price for $120,000 at minus 215, just adding to our position. We'd love to see the Rays win this World Series. Game three tomorrow night. I believe it's Charlie Morton against Walker Buehler, right? That's a hell of a pitching matchup.
It is. And Buehler's getting all the love because he is the Dodgers ace. Yeah. Well, let's not sleep on Charlie Morton.
Morton was great in the ALCS.
Yeah, no, he has a game seven track. My three picks going into this series were Tampa Bay plus 1.5 games, was Dodgers plus 490 and to win in seven, and Mookie Betts 8-1 to win the MVP. So I'm off to a good start. And then yesterday I had Tampa Bay to score first, Tampa Bay team total over, and actually game one, I laid off everything. So I'm seeing it pretty well. I really want to see a Dodgers victory. I don't think I can stomach another loss. And it's not just the third loss in the last 4 years in the World Series this would be, but these other playoff losses have been just excruciating. So not just last year at the Nats, it was just those beatdowns by the Cardinals, and even going back to the, like, 96 or whatever when, like, the Braves just smoked them after they just had to win one game at the end of the regular season to win the division. They did not against the Padres. It's just been decades of this. It's just teasing me. I'd almost rather not have this great payroll and great roster and not get teased.
How tense would it be if this was Dodgers Astros?
Oh,
like, I know.
Or in our
as painful in Texas. Yeah, I mean, as painful as the Dodgers losing the series would be for Dodgers fans, I can't only imagine what it would be like if they lost to Houston in the World Series. So at least the Rays are, for the most part, I'd say a pretty likable group.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'd be rooting for them if they weren't facing the Dodgers. Okay, buddy, let's hit the bonanza.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Okay, big bounce back for your guy here. I went heavy, and I just kind of threw around the numbers. Didn't really get a reaction out of you, Murray, when I threw around the numbers, but I guess you're desensitized to some of the volatility.
What did you want my reaction to be?
Well, I went 2K on a teaser and 1,500 on a straight bet. You know, you're sitting here with your nickel plays.
That's the DK that I've come to know and love. You want a reaction out of me. It's when you bring in the oars and you do nothing. That's when I'm like, what the hell's wrong with Doug today? I expect you to do that stuff. You're not going to get a reaction out of me when you do exactly what I anticipate.
Well, week four, I've only lost 1 week in the Bonanza, but that was a big hit. I went 0-5, $6,100. So I've scratched and clawed my way back. I'm in the black. I'm plus 700. But, oh, by the way, we have a gentleman who was tweeting at us because I was so incompetent and not had my buttoned up. Even Christina, our wonderful producer, offered to take care of the Bonanza numbers, and the guys chiming in on Twitter helping out. I feel bad. I'm not that pathetic. So I said, Christina, you have enough on your plate. You do enough. So thanks, but no thanks.
Who is that guy? Is that individual somebody that I should be wary of? Is he on your payroll?
Is this an honest loyal listener?
His avatar is a picture of Darren, the intern from Seinfeld. That's a great picture. One of my favorite episodes of Seinfeld, an apartment which may or may not contain a chicken. That's one of my favorite episodes. With the intern, Darren.
I didn't really notice it. I'm looking at it now, and Twitter handle is Bonanza Burner, and it says self-appointed intern for the Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Wow.
So well done.
Okay, we need the help, man. We need the help. I'm fine with it.
I'll check my math, but we're $50 off on each of us, so we're pretty close. So I have you minus 1,800. I have myself plus 700, so within striking distance.
I got a long way to go.
I got there. I should say it pays to sometimes grab those teaser numbers early in the week. I had the Ravens minus 1.5 with the Dolphins tease.
Oh, nice.
And, That yeah. I mean, it should not have been there. I was yelling at the TV because I had some straights and some other stuff going on with the Ravens. But
do you find yourself doing that a lot? Are you somebody that would be seen yelling at the TV a lot?
I'm very like one out of every 10 bad questionable calls. I'll yell, but like, come on, you know, I'll just like do one of. But I really thought it was egregious. Like they didn't call it. They called it DPI. It was just like a sequence of events. It was just totally dictated by the score. If it was a tie game, they wouldn't have called this nonsense. And that's what made me so mad. Right. But
I get it.
So I like letting you go on the tee box. I think I have like one play. I mean, I really today, you know, the whole purpose of this was to do a bankroll instead of like five picks every week, ATS, like you guys do in your world-renowned contest, which is fine. I just think it's not really representative because some weeks you love, some weeks. Now, ironically, I just got done talking about the week I loved. I went 0-6 or whatever the hell I went, 0-5. But
yeah.
I think it's important to like last week, I was really proud of myself. I love the Dolphins. I hate, you know, the Jets joke. So I like hammered them on the line. I should have done money. I mean, I should have done more, but certainly on the show, it's my, that was my SportsCenter pick. And I will say, you know, there's a little bit of image you have to worry about. You can't just like lay double digits in the NFL for your SportsCenter best bet every week, right? Like you're on sport, like you can't be sitting there and try to be taken seriously. So I think it's an extra sort of, it's a big matzo ball out there when you lay about 9.5 with the Dolphins in the NFL for your best bet. So it's almost like a double win when you do it. Cause my whole thing was like, look, the Jets are that bad, Flacco's that bad. I just got to take this opportunity. You know, you don't want to make a practice of laying close to double digits in the NFL, but I think the Jets are a special circumstance. Now, Buffalo's probably not going to be my best bet this week unless I get confirmation Flacco starting, but it's more so I don't love the week. So for me, Murray, I'm going to do a teaser. I'm taking the Chargers down to 1.5, and I'm taking the Saints down to the same 1.5 as well.
Okay. How much are we putting on that one?
I'll do 500. Let's keep it easy. And I want a reaction. Right. So.
No, I don't see. I don't think you should be criticized for a bet, regardless of it was if you bet the favorite or the dog or whatever. If the number would be much different the following week, like Miami would be more than a 9.5-point favorite if they played the Jets again this week in Miami. So you were right to play Miami for sure. But I don't know why anybody would criticize you.
You did it every week, but you're right. I mean, the quote unquote taking these ugly dogs plus 3.5 and they get blown out. It's like that wears on you too. But I got criticized
by a lot of people for taking an ugly dog of Brian Ortega against the Korean Zombie on Saturday.
Ooh.
And boy, do I wish I'd put more on that one, because Brian Ortega won all 5 rounds of that fight. So yeah, you know, sometimes you can't worry about who's criticizing you. I wouldn't put too much stock into that. I do have one pick though. I haven't really had too much time to sink my teeth into the NFL this week yet, but I do like the Rams. I think the Rams are going to take care of business and beat the Bears by double digits on Monday night. So give me the Rams minus the 6 for 500.
So fading the square dog.
I am. And I think it's, you know, the Rams are off of a very bad loss, and Chicago, I know I praised them earlier and I do give them credit for their record. But I do think the Rams will take care of business here.
I think it's a good play. This might be I might load up for a middle. I think this might be like, I don't see the Bears going wire to wire game. So I might do one of those.
Yeah. I can see that.
Have some fun with the -6 and then +9.5, +10. Because the Bills.
Jared Goff makes me nervous, though. Can I just say that Jared Goff is somebody that really makes me nervous. I don't trust him. At all.
He does make me nervous. Hey, by the way, I wanted to throw this out there. I thought this was, you know, this sort of hit me when Ryan Fitzpatrick got demoted, and we'll end on this. So I'm in a survivor league. I'm in two pretty big leagues and I'm alive. And I look at the teams I've used. I'm just like, wow. So I've used the Dolphins, the Cowboys, the Rams, the Cardinals. I mean, this is like some bad. I mean, what I have left, I mean, we're talking like Ravens, we're talking like Steelers, we're talking some big. Now, I have used the Chiefs, but other than that, I've got some bad teams out of the way, and I'm down between like 10 guys left. So it's not like there's like 500 left. So I think it's funny. I could use the Dolphins last week, and now it's like even better that I used them because they're going to Tua.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's a slight a slight downgrade to Tua. We'll see what Tua has. That's a comment that I might look very foolish for in the future.
Slight,
but we don't really know.
I think Fitzpatrick's good.
But we just don't know what Tua is yet. You know, it's possible that it's a big downgrade. So we'll see. I'll take a wait and see approach there. But I was a little surprised to see Miami do that. But it's hard to argue with too much of what Miami's doing under this new regime and Brian Flores. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Hey, they got Houston's first round pick too. So those guys are doing a lot of good things in Miami. They're doing a good job.
Well said. Well said. All right, my friend. Good stuff as always. And we're going to track how this stuff all unfolds.
Yes, sir. We'll talk next week, man.
Kicking is for losers.
Okay. Thanks to Mr. Executive Director. Always good information and entertainment with my good friend, John Murray. And thanks to Matthew and Lou and Matt Humans yesterday on that pod. Again, go check it out. That's Wednesday College Football Pod. Also looking ahead to UFC 254, obviously with Habib's return to the octagon facing Justin Gaethje. Thanks to everyone for rating, reviewing, and subscribing. We'll see you back here next week.